a social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book, take a walk, unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September, paint a self-portrait, catch up on a TV series, do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you are in the known world listening to this live or on podcast, we'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother. Myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, as well as I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, Dr. Nate Chapman. And we are here again for all of your community, mental health, love, relationship, and attachment needs. For those that would like to participate or have questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, you can email us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2, B, psych, P-S-Y-C-H, at gmail.com, b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, any of the perspectives or ideas that you hear on this show are not supported by Marshall University or WMUL, by any of their supporters, affiliates, or sponsors. These are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, any advice that you hear, take this advice at your own risk. And while what you may hear may be, to some extent, may be therapeutic, as Dr. Chapman also lets us know, this is not what? This is absolutely, positively, this is absolutely, positively not therapy, okay? So, it has been an interesting week. It's been a long couple of weeks, interesting week. So again, I'm going to play a quick song, and when we come back, we're going to rock and roll again. We're having a couple of technical issues. We're going to get straightened out. And again, this is Brother to Brother with Dr. Keelan Hinton and Dr. Nate Chapman. So give us 2 seconds, stick around, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back. experiment. It's a placebo or stimulant, but I don't want to pay again up until the drugs kick in. And it's a long, long day. They're all the same when you're taking care not to edge too close to the precipice. But it's a long way down, so I pencil. And life can be a drag, yeah, it's quick to get on. You're bound to cough so black if you leave yourself exposed. You gotta keep bossing the open windows. It can be tiring, I guess, amusing yourself to death. It's pretty hard to return sub when they say everything is the worst. I'm terrified of silence, more than death, taxes, or violence. Go to church so I can send your problems and cry by you. But it's a long way down, so I've been told. And life can be a drag, yeah, it's quick to get.
Hi, Jack. Hi, Jack. Hi, Jack.
Does showing up for work at a ballpark or an arena sound good to you? A Marshall University sports journalism degree can get you there. Sports journalism at Marshall is important. It's serious and it's big business. Sports media and communications careers are some of the most competitive and marketable worldwide in a multi-billion dollar industry. We'll prepare you to think critically, report accurately, and artfully tell the stories on and off the field or court. If this sounds like you, the Marshall School of Journalism is ready and eager to start your journey. Learn more at marshall.edu/SOJMC.
All right, we are back. Our apologies for technical difficulties we had. Again, this is Brother to Brother with Dr. Keelan Hinton as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. Dr. Chapman, are you there, sir?
Hello, everybody.
All right, all right. We can rock and roll. We can rock and roll. Now, again, as we always said, any of the perspectives, ideas, or suggestions that you hear on this show are not don't represent Marshall University or WMUL, any of its supporters, affiliates, or sponsors, but again, are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Keelan Hinton, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. And again, as we said, we've taken this thing coast to coast. I am still here in the great state of West Virginia, and my brother and friend, Dr. Nate Chapman, is in San Diego. So we have taken this thing and stretched this thing as far as it can be stretched. Exactly. So we thank everyone who continue to support the show, continue to listen. And let's get into it. How have you been, sir?
Been good. You know, new year. And certainly there's still some remnants of 2020 apparently in this year. But overall, good. We just started our quarter over here 2 weeks ago, so we're in the beginning of starting off the academic year for us. I know you guys are still on break.
Yeah, we're getting ready to start back up, and just hoping that the vaccine is coming out, and slowly but surely, hopefully, as more and more people, hopefully people are convinced that it's safe. A few people around us have had vaccine. They haven't seen anyone grow any extra limbs or arms or legs that we know of. Okay. Hopefully people will feel encouraged and go get the vaccine.
I've seen that. It seems like people that I'm friends with on Facebook from West Virginia, mainly because most of them are out there, psychologists and whatnot. A number of them seem like they've already went and got it. So seems like that's kind of going kind of smooth over there.
Yeah. I don't. In regards to doses, how much we have, I don't know. But I do know that they've started with, you know, first responders, those who work in healthcare, those who do therapy, who see people, things of that nature. They're trying to start with teachers and stuff pretty soon. So things are doing. You know, I think we're doing our best. I think it's not easy, and I commend them for everything that they're doing to try to keep us safe. I can only imagine how hard it is. So definitely kudos to those who are in charge to protect us. So moving on and moving forward, people have been meditating and praying that 2021 would be a better year than 2020. You see people online, you see people talk about how, you know, this year is going to be my year, you know, it's going to be a great year. And I haven't seen a whole lot of that because I think folks are scared. They don't want to speak too soon. But no, go ahead.
No, I haven't seen a whole lot of that either.
So I think people are just nervous. They don't want to quote unquote jinx it. So we move from 2020 to 2021, hopeful, and then in the first 6 days, and we, and like I said, I think that we, to some degree, and not to talk about, I think this is interesting to, this is something that we should talk about, to some degree we should talk about this, the insurrection. The storming of the Capitol. And I think, as two psychologists, I think it's important for us to talk about, again, not the political, not to speak about it from a political perspective, but psychologically what happens to people and what happens to groups in particular. How do groups get here? How do people get here? I think it's easy to believe. It's easy to believe that a group of people are crazy.
Yeah.
It's easy to believe that everybody there, whether it's a Black Lives Matter protest, whether it's, you know, a protest for Trump, whatever the case may be, it's easy to believe that the group is out of their mind. And what research shows and a part of what we know is that's not always necessarily the case. That there is something that happens in groups that people get swept up in feelings. They get swept up in the emotion that, I guess for a lack of a better term, energy is a real thing. And it's hard for people to understand how. It's easier to understand when we talk about what happens to you when you go to church. What happens when you're at a basketball game or a baseball game and the ref makes a bad call and someone yells and you get upset and you yell and they get upset and they yell. I wonder if it's easier to understand. In those situations, we don't think about what we see in groups and in riots in the same way. Maybe it's because the consequences of what's happening are so much more very different. What happens, you know, the violence or the catastrophe that happens after a riot or after a group is marching down a street, because the outcome is so different, we see it as something different. You know what I mean? So I think it's important to talk about what happens with groups, because I don't know. I don't believe that everybody that went to protest or that went to hear the president speak went with the intentions of tearing something up. But it's interesting how a few people, how that energy can be galvanized. Like a few people, like when something is happening, and this is really, really deep. A lot of this is social psychological stuff. You know, how people get caught and swept up in groups. The group is just, they never really have ill intentions, but as that energy and the group moves and everybody's getting excited and everybody's like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's go. People, there's something about the anonymity of a group. My face can't be seen. It's almost like people to some degree lose their identity and they become a part of a larger whole. And they almost lose themselves to some extent. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it definitely happens. I guess I have a couple thoughts when you were bringing it up and you were naming the different things that have led to protests or, in some cases, riots. And I think I had a bit of a reaction of thinking about Black Lives Movement in context, just what happened the other day. And I know it's just an example to say that there's all kinds of protests that lead to different things. But I just wanted to mention that because I think there is a difference in the level of what takes place and the consequences of each thing and the purpose behind each thing. But in general, I think when people get caught up in group think, it's easier to forget about individual consequences. It's easier to, well, this is how the group's moving, this is how I'm moving, or maybe not even think so much about what the consequences will be for you because this is a whole group doing it. I mean, not that it would be the best example, but it would be like you driving on the highway, speed limit is 65, everybody's going 80. Besides the fact of trying to be safe on the highway, you have the excuse that, hey, this is what everybody's doing. Everybody's doing it. You can't just be mad at me because, you know, you caught me, but what about all these other people? So I think that mindset of this is a whole group does cause a person to maybe just in that moment lose individual accountability.
Yeah. Again, there's something about the anonymity of a group. You know, I truly believe a lot of times when there's a group, people will make decisions and do things that they wouldn't normally do if they were standing alone by themselves. You know,
yeah.
As I told you before, I used to referee basketball, and the things that you hear come out of people's mouths when they're in the crowd is unbelievable. But after the game, I'll bump into some of those same people as I'm walking to the parking lot, and it's like they seem different. I've even had people apologize. You know what I mean? There's just something about when you feel like you're invisible. And I don't necessarily know. I don't know if that means, well, if you said it because you felt invisible, you had that in you in the first place. I don't know if I necessarily believe that. I just think that there is something to the energy of a group and the anonymity that in some cases people react and respond in ways that they probably normally wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And also, though, you have people in the group that have that intent, you know, that I guess in some ways are puppeteering that group. You know, let's get them to the right place. Let's start to do certain things that will get the whole group engaged, leading people to do nefarious things simply because they have an idea about the power of what can happen in the group. I think if people are joining the group in general, they have some basic reason why they join that group. You know, whatever the cause is, they believe it in some way. So there's some individual part to it. Some may be about just trying to be about a movement. You know, you see some of the videos of some of the people that storm the Capitol and they say, like, oh, it's a revolution. Maybe they were having that particular thought. But I think it's a combination of those things. Somebody who has an individual thought, ideology, then they go to a group movement, kind of get hyped by whatever the group is doing, and then some people in the group, there are some people that I think are more radical and cause like a powder keg kind of action and make that bomb explode.
Yeah, and that's true. I think that there's a safety that you feel. You know, how do people become a part of these groups in the first place? And for the same, I wonder if it's the same reason that people join gangs or anything else. People want control. I am upset at what's happening to black men. I'm upset at what's happening to my president. I'm upset at whatever the situation may be. And I, by my lonesome, have no power, have no control. But when I find other people who think and feel like me, and guess what? It's not just one or two of us. There may be one or two of us on our block, but I know five or six other people on three blocks away. And guess what? We've been talking, and a lot, and there's 600 or 700 other people in another city, and we're all going to coordinate, and we're all going to get together, and we're all going to meet in this space. So I wonder if a lot of it is feeling. Remember, I told you, I wonder how much of life and how much of what we do boils down to power and control. You know, people want to feel like they have control over their lives. People don't want to feel like anything can happen to them. Anybody can do anything to them and they have no control over it. I think groups make us feel powerful. They make us feel safe. There is camaraderie. We don't feel alone. The fear that we have of being alone goes away. So, like, I think that those are some of the things that draw us to the group. But I think personalities matter. The thing that we do know about people is that the average person is probably a follower and not a leader. People want to be led. So it's like if you join these groups and you want to be a part of something, and there's strong personalities, and it's easy. I think it's easy for strong personalities to manipulate groups, because this is, I think, the things that all great leaders know and understand is that people want to be led to some degree. I think the average person is probably a follower, not a leader, or wants to be led, and that there's another point. Oh, and that people need, this is the most important point, is that people want to believe. People have a need to believe in something, anything. So if you understand that people want and need to be led, and that people have this, innate something. I don't know if it's etched in our DNA or something. We have this innate thing that we need to believe in something. And if I know that you need to believe, you want to believe, you want a cause to believe in something, I think that makes it easier to sway people's perspectives and feelings and emotions individually as well as in groups. So I think that's what happens. You go because, and most of those people there probably went just because I'm going to protest. But when you get caught in the moment and they're strong personalities and they play to your fears and they speak to your fears to some degree and they make you feel like, look, this is our moment. This is our time. When will we ever be stronger than we are now to get our voices heard?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting because there's a lot that I'm thinking about in response to what you just said. I think going back to the basic idea of why people join groups, I do think the extent of what the group is matters, because I do think to some degree there is an individual purpose that is satisfied by that particular group. You know, someone joining, like before things like these groups that are presently here today. When one went to protest for civil rights, there were people there that just had the basic idea that this is not fair. We need to do something to create justice. There are probably certain things that happen while they're in the group where they feel some type of encouragement, part of a group, part of a movement, despite whatever things they were experiencing. But then I think with certain groups, like certain groups that are more extremist in nature, and I would include some Trump supporters in that category. Maybe not all, but some, because it hits the fringes of some extreme kind of beliefs. And what it reminds me of, to some extent, is the play on manipulating certain things. It's manipulating fears, basic fears that people have, and reminds me of what happened during the Reconstruction. There were lots of problems during the Reconstruction, particularly for the recently freed slave, but one of the problems was, it wasn't just the problems that the former slave master had, it was for white people and their impressions they had, and it was a smaller percentage of white people that actually owned slaves than white people that existed, and the larger percentage are gonna be the poor white people. And so one of the fears that was played on was, what's going to happen to labor and workforces? Well, now that you have these slaves out in the labor and workforce, guess whose jobs they're going to take, which is the same card that's still played with immigrants today. So that fear really can spark a lot of different things for the person who knows how to pull those strings, whether it's for political or whatever reasons. And the basic fear is that you're not going to think about me. When I think about this whole situation, specifically with the rioting, I don't think that, hey, this is just a 45 problem. I think that this is just a symptom of a larger thing. And whether we're talking about this group or other groups, what happens for these groups to explode is that there's one fear that gets played on by somebody who knows how to puppeteer those fears for their own type of gain. A smaller gain, it's a larger gain for that person, but not a large gain for the society. But in order to do their dirty work, they have to really play on the fears that exist in a larger group to move. And I think we've seen it done time and time again in history, and we're just seeing it play out again now.
Yeah. I think that you just sort of touched on another component that I sort of thought about as I was coming up here preparing. And in order for all of this to happen, in some way, shape, form, or fashion, there has to be the development of a them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Look at what they are doing to us. Look at what they are doing to you. And I think that that's probably one of the most two most powerful pieces is in order for all of those people to galvanize in that way, they have to believe that there is a they. You know, we talked about it before when we do attachment and relationship stuff. Something that happens in relationships is, you know, people get so busy trying to win the argument that they forget that they're on the same team.
Yeah.
You know, like you're trying to win as if the other person is an adversary, and that is your partner, that's your spouse. It's so easy to forget that you're on the same team. And I think that that happens in America a lot, that we all have our issues. You know, African Americans have issues that we deal with in America. Poor white people have issues. Rich white people feel like all their money be taken by taxes to give to other people. Like everyone has a perspective and everyone has an issue. And it's so easy to get caught up in our own pain and our own drama and our own trauma and our own issues that it starts to feel like it's us versus them or us versus everyone else. It's so easy to develop, especially when the perception is someone else has an easier time than you. Someone else doesn't have it as hard as you. It's so easy to develop the they. And that is what I think is so dangerous. And I think that that is a part of what drove this. You know, now I don't know if this gets into sort of, and maybe it's another show for another time. I don't know if it gets into identity politics. And we got Democrats, we got Republican, and you got to choose. And then once you choose a camp, the other becomes the they. It's not, hey, we're all American and we all want to succeed and we want everybody to win. We just got different perspectives on how it should be done.
Yeah.
That's not the perspective.
I think your couple analogy is right on with some added things. So we'll say that this couple is together and they have some differences. As you know, all people have some differences, and then those differences get the best of them, so they monsterize that partner. When we think about a couple, we think, that's ridiculous, but we can also appreciate how easy that happens. But I think the difference here in America is that if we use the couple example, there's always been a seed of something's wrong with that other person. Even if you've had times where you've gotten, it's been ingrained that there's, in the history, at least in America, there's something wrong with some other. And yeah. All the person who really wants to create mayhem in your relationship has to do is figure out how to be a little paranoid about that. Then it'll be easy to monsterize the other partner. And the reason they do it, though, is for their own gain. But in order for it to really work on a national level, we have to activate a number of people. And if we can do that, we can change the whole political landscape.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we get to suffer for that as a people, you know, as Americans, as people throughout the world. I mean, it's not just an American thing, this whole process, but yeah.
I agree. So I think we're going down a good road. We're on to something. Oh, let me stop for a station identification. Station identification, this is WMUL 88.1 FM, Marsh University. Again, we want to thank everyone who has decided to take a few minutes and listen to us. This is Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Henson. And again, we are here for your mental health, love, attachment, relationship, and community needs. And today we're starting the show out talking about the storming of the Capitol. And again, not from a political perspective, but psychologically and emotionally, how do we as people get there? As individuals, how do we get to that space and place? As groups, this idea of how does everyone get swept up in the emotion of what's happening with the group? And is it a mistake to say everyone was out there to cause trouble? Is it a mistake to say everyone that is a part of a group that something bad happens, whether it's Black Lives Matter or whether it was storming the Capitol or whatever group and whatever march or protest or where it may be? Is it true that, you know, can a few bad apples spoil a bunch? So that's where we are. And Dr. Chapman, I think you have a good idea. You know, I think we're on to something. This notion or idea about the they. I think having a they is key to groups having a focus on what it is they're trying to achieve. There has to be some other that is doing something to us, that is oppressing us, that is stopping us in some way, shape, form, or fashion. But to take it a step further, I think there has to be more. In my head, I see this as different. I see these as two separate concepts, but they may be the same concept. I think there has to be a they. But I also think that there has to be, to some degree, a dehumanization of the they in order for groups to do what they do. In order for groups to attack or behave in some sort of nefarious way against another group. I'll give you an example. So I was teaching a race and culture class, and we was talking about the psychology of slavery, post-traumatic slave syndrome, stuff like that. Somebody brought up lynching. So in the class, we pulled up a picture of a lynching. And in this picture, there is someone in the picture who had been hanged. And there may have been 100 people there. There were people, there were kids. Somebody had a blanket and was having a picnic on the side. There were little kids that were smiling with the body. And we had a discussion of how, we talked about how do we get here? Someone's reaction was, all of those people are crazy. That was their reaction. And I said, I don't think that all of these people, there's no way that all of these, there may have been 200 people in this picture. I said, there's no way that all these people are crazy. But that's just the end hanging in a tree. So I'm saying that to say, it's easier to hurt people or to lash out or to react and respond or to not think about your behavior as bad as it really is. One, when there's a they. But two, you take that a step further and you dehumanize the other. That's not someone's husband, someone's father, someone's brother. That's the N-word. When we hear about girls who work the street dying, occupational hazard, that's just a prostitute. That's not someone's, that's just a junkie. See, we find these terms that deface people or dehumanize people, and we don't think about them in a human, you know what I mean? Like I'm searching, like we don't think about them as people. We find these terms that deface them and dehumanize them. And it becomes easier in the process to want to storm the Capitol or in some march to break windows or to hurt the other. One, it's the other. And two, that's just a prostitute. That's just the N-word. That's just the, you know, whatever it is. They're just, you know what I mean? Like, I think the way we speak about, hey, those are just insurgents. It's guerrilla warfare. Those are guerrillas. They're just foreigners. They're just, like, I think the terms we use, the way we refer to other people matter. It shapes, it can potentially shape how we think about other groups and other people. So I think that in the process, it becomes easier to not be as thoughtful. Because it's they, it's the them, you know, it's the neocons or it's the liberals or it's the progressives. Like, when we give these groups these names and attach to these names our stereotypes, our stigmas, or all these sort of negative things or not flattering things, it becomes easier to feel justified in doing what you're doing because they are the ones that are holding us back. They are attacking our president, or they are the ones who control the purse strings, give these police the money to do what they're doing. You know, so I wonder how much of, when people go out, as an example of what happened last week, you know, like they said, a storm is coming. We're going to get them. We're tired of them. We're tired of their, who is this they? But in people's minds, there is a them that they feel attacked by. And those are the things that sort of justify getting in these groups and these groups getting out of hand and not feeling bad when people, you know, cause, wreak havoc and destruction and stuff like that. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in addition to that, because I'm trying to think about in context of all groups, though I don't think some groups should be compared to others, like Black Lives Matter, for instance. But I think that sometimes it's not necessarily just a dehumanizing. Say, for example, if it's a peaceful protest, not what happened last week, but that turns into some destruction of some type of property or something. I think sometimes it's there might be outrage that is sparked by experiencing being dehumanized. And I guess in some way that could even be applied to these rioters in some ways or what happened last week. Because the battles are going back and forth politically, you know, like, oh, between the Republicans and Democrats. So name calling is going both ways. And I also think in addition to that, when it comes to people that end up doing these, besides just kind of going with the group but becoming more extremists, I think what happens is there's personal holes that haven't been filled. So you talked about everybody wanting to be, needing to be led. And I think the thing is, if you don't lead yourself, then someone's going to find a way to lead you. And the reason that that happens, I don't think it's necessarily just around wanting to be led. It's about wanting to be purpose driven. So if you don't have no purpose and you feel empty, then you're more prone to falling under someone else's purpose. And then if you add into that, that what you've experienced so far is some form of neglect, not necessarily by, when I said it, you might be thinking about people's parents, but society, others, you feel like you haven't fit in, you've been deprived, in the case of the person who doesn't have much money and they've been on the lower end of the economy, and trying to find a reason that that happens, when you can identify that this is the reason, they, the other, and there's a group that supports it, that fills a couple holes for you. Something to do with that anger that you have, some purpose to follow, and it'll be easy for you to get lost in that purpose. I think that's true for people that become fanatic in anything, whether it's something like that, extremist or religious, or, some of those, the extreme is the problem, but in the middle could be good. But what makes somebody susceptible to that, to me, is the right kind of holes and what they've been missing and how they feel like they've been neglected by society and people a certain way. Someone comes along to fill that particular hole and gives them purpose and guidance, and then they devote everything to it. And why not? They were devoted. They had nothing to devote to before, and they feel like this was a savior in some way.
And that is, and that, that, my apologies, I lost my audio there. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you start a cult.
Yeah.
That actually is how it happens. You, like we said, people need something to believe in. And I see you, and I know that you have a hole somewhere in your heart, somewhere in your identity, and I'm going to come in and I'm going to fill it. And I'm going to create a they for you, is what I'm going to do. And it gives you meaning. Like you said it perfectly. It gives you meaning. It gives you purpose. It drives you. Most importantly, it gives you someone to blame for whatever your troubles are. You made a statement, I think it, this notion of idea of being purpose driven, this idea of thinking for yourself. Is that something that we're encouraged to do? In a nation, is that something, do you really want that when it comes to nation building? There's a guy, a book that I love. It's a book called Race, Rhetoric, and Identity, written by Malif Asante. And he talked about the process of nation building, and basically talks about when you have different people with different religions, perspectives, ideas, cultures, races, you can't have everybody doing their own thing. Now, one of the ways that you create unity and cohesion, because you have to figure out, he made this point, that you have to figure out how to get everybody on the same page to some degree. You can't have everybody doing their own thing. So one of these things he talked about was, again, this is sort of getting off the beaten path, but this idea of creating a common enemy. So again, like we said, Scottish and Polish and Irish people, when they got here, if you're listening and you're Scottish, Polish, or Irish, that's a story you don't hear a lot. They got it, man. They got it. They took a whip. They took it whooping when they got here. Like, it was not easy. But why Anglo-Saxon said, look, we can't get these people to leave. They said, I don't like you. You don't like me. But these black folks, they can mess it up for everybody. So then fast forward. Look, black people, I don't like you. You don't like me. These Mexicans jumping the border, they're going to take your jobs. And then they said, look, I don't like you. You don't like me. These people from the Middle East, they're flying these planes into these buildings. So the point he was making is we get to this point that you got people with so many different cultures and perspectives and religions and ideas, and you kind of can't have everybody doing their own thing. you create this common enemy. You use a little bit of fear. You create a common enemy. And it's just the same play that's ran over and over and over again. And I just thought that was interesting you talked about this. I mean, I think that you are completely right. We have to think for ourselves. We have to find our own values, our own goals, our own beliefs. And we have to live our own truth and decide for ourselves. But is that something that we are encouraged to do? What happens to the kid that's not like every... It starts from the time we're kids in elementary. Grammar school. Like, what happens to the kid that's not like everybody else? You know as well as I do. He's going to get he or she's going to get laughed at. You're going to get picked on for being different. You're not like the group. Group cohesion. We're trained and ingrained that being with the group and like the group is so very important. It's something we should all want.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not saying like, oh, that you should, you know, I do believe that you should think for yourself. You know, that would be something. Probably if I had a couple quotes that I was going to, you know, fashion up and point up somewhere and say that this is one of my quotes, it would be, you know, think for yourself. But I'm just saying that it makes somebody susceptible when they have all these variables. But I think that the whole idea of group think or social thinking is evolutionary. I mean, you can't survive by yourself. Like, we're born into this world an infant, that there's no way you would survive by yourself. I mean, as humans, we need the longest amount of support compared to other non-human animals. So it's like, of course we need others. That's just the way it is. Even when I meet people that say, I don't need everybody, that just tells me probably you had a history, unless you have some particular psychopathology. You had some type of history where you learned it's not okay for you to trust people, and this is your defense. I understand that, but I know when you say you don't need other people, you don't really probably mean that. You're saying that because it's a defense.
Yeah.
But it's just, it makes that problem makes us susceptible to this group thing. It's a survival thing that should be for our good, but can also be twisted and used to cause us to do nefarious things.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I thought it was important that we at least touched on this. I think it's dangerous and it's dismissive to just dismiss people as crazy and not try to understand the phenomena, how people who don't, like, people who completely went there not having those intentions at all can get swept up in group momentum. And next thing you know, you standing at a podium with antler ears on your head with no shirt on. Like,
yeah.
It's, I don't mean to laugh and trivialize it, but it really can happen to, it can happen to you that quickly. And it's easy to believe, oh, it can never happen to me. Oh, it can never happen to me. I see it happen to people all the time. Like, as a referee, I've been cursed out by, like, people on the motherboard, like, at their church. Like, they get swept up in the emotion of the game or what's happening, and something happens they don't like. Somebody next to them is yelling, and they're yelling, and I'm just like, you baptize people at church. Now you're cursing at a game. Like, how does that happen?
Right.
Are people fake, or are people complex, or there is something about certain environments that will move people, that if you're not cognizant, you know, it could happen.
I know we got like 10 minutes left, but I'm curious, maybe a snapshot of, you know, conspiracy theories, that's your thing, you know, these classes on that and all. I feel like conspiracy to some degree fits into this. I'm wondering what your thought is on how the power of some type of conspiracy theory could influence this kind of behavior.
The power of conspiracy, how conspiracy theory influences
that particular situation.
See, the problem with conspiracy theorists is, especially if there is a they and you feel like that they has power, that they controls, you feel like that they controls information, controls the media. So even when people are telling you something that is true, you know who really controls the media, and that's just misinformation. So you run this circle in your head of it's misinformation. it's interesting. Harvard did a lot of really dope studies in 2017, 2018, just about, and it was something you touched on about, you know, again, I think we may have touched on this before, who's more likely to believe in conspiracy theory. And they gave people personality tests and stuff. They were talking about like the poor people, people who felt powerless. The more powerless you felt, socioeconomic status played a point. It's kind of like it's a control thing. There are these things that I don't have control over in my life, and conspiracy theory gives me a reason, you know, gives me someone to blame. Okay. Now, to some degree, I get that. I think that's true. But there's also the other side of the coin that when things have happened, like real things have happened to poor people over time, we can't ignore the experiences of poor black people and poor white people as well. You know, black people talk about Tuskegee. You know, poor white people talk about the human radiation experiment. Like, Jewish people talk about Willowbrook Hospital, where they got injected with cancer cells. Like, there are things that have happened to cultures that play a part in those seeds being planted in the past, and we just sort of pass those down from generation to generation.
Eugenics.
So it's kind of like you're in a relationship. When you're in a relationship, and if you get cheated on, it's kind of like everything that person says or does becomes suspect to you. That's kind of how conspiracy theory works. No matter what someone does, I know it's like it's not. And what devastates people about cheating is that I never thought you had the capacity to do that. But once you know someone has the ability and the capacity to hurt you or look you in your face and lie, you see them completely different. You see them differently. And that is what happens with conspiracy theory. You know that they've done it before. And maybe that was a bad time in our past, and we've cleaned all that up as a government or as Democrats or as Republicans or whatever. But the fact that I know that you have the ability to do it, that's why it's so hard.
And I think that example is good because it also points to thinking about that person who's been cheated on, who has a problem with that person, but then they get in another relationship, they have a problem with other people. And it's like, okay, I have a problem with the state government, but also I have a problem with the hospital. And I have a problem with these other areas that don't seem like they're connected, but in this person's mind, I could see how they psychologically would be connected. And I'm like, well, I can't put that past anybody.
Yeah, yeah. And especially when you get into, you know, there are only a certain amount of major networks. Two or three people own the four or five major networks. Oh, it's all a conspiracy. What is his back? Like, somebody's controlling his information. And it just, you get caught in that loop from a conspiracy theory. You know, you get caught in that cycle or that circle, and it's hard to get out of, no matter how much information someone shows you.
Right, and I think now I'm thinking more about this. I don't give it much thought, but now that I'm thinking more about this, you know, even when we think about just the things that have influenced the economic status, it's not just that. It's the whole system of America. Like if you think about, there's a documentary, I think it's on Amazon. It's basically The Men Who Built America, and you can see how all of those typhoons or businessmen really did some shady, corrupt things that had an impact on the building of America overall. It wasn't just about the socioeconomic statuses and just groups of people. It was the whole thing. They were in the pockets of presidents. And like, this is real. This was happening. So that's the other thing that makes it hard, because some of the stuff is reality. It's like watching it off of network TV. But some of these things do happen.
Yeah, and that's... It's hard to know what, you know, I could talk about conspiracy. I'm stopping myself because I'm like, I don't want to go down this road. We've got like 5 minutes left. I don't want to go down this road, but it really is hard, especially when you know that things have happened. You know what I'm saying? Like this notion, the idea that the that the election was stolen. All it takes is one irregularity in the mind of a conspiracy theorist. Yeah. And everything else could be a lie.
Yeah.
And what are the chances that absolutely nothing, like nothing happened wrong? You know what I'm saying? Like, right. Statistically speaking, what are the chances? So if they found out that, you know, something went wrong, how many other things happened that went wrong they're probably covering up? You see what I'm saying? So it seems ridiculous and like it's nefarious, but like that's sort of the...
Right, but I think that example, going back to the cheating situation, so this person has experienced, rather if they're in a new relationship now, somebody who's cheated before, and in that situation, it was hard for them to believe, but once it happened, they're like, okay, it can't happen. So now this person has went out, said they were going to the grocery store, and then come back 3 hours later. That small nuance of, okay, where were you at? Oh, I was at the grocery store, but then actually they did this other thing they didn't mention. That one little lie gives room that it's possible that they were out there doing something else.
Yeah.
Because why did they lie about that? So, and the likelihood of lies happening in relationships are strong.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't, anybody list, I mean, again, I'm not saying this to justify anybody storming the Capitol or, again, right. We're here to explore, again, I really think it was good that, you know, we're not here to talk about this from a political perspective, but psychologically and emotionally, what are people feeling? What are people thinking when they go, you know, in these events, like, in these things, in these events, and these experiences pop off? And I think it's a mistake to say everybody's crazy. It's a mistake to say that was everybody's intention to go and tear up something. You'd be surprised at how many people went there to stand up in their minds, to stand up and fight for their rights and let their voices be heard. And all it really takes is a few personalities. It's just like, you know, a lot of my classes are discussion based. All it takes is two or three people. That's what I learned. All it takes is two or three people to make an entire class epic. If you get two or three people to start to speak, everybody else, it just opens up like wildfire. And it all starts from two or three people.
I think going back to this riot situation, it also only takes two or three people to make that situation spiral downwards.
I agree.
You know, I have chats in my class, it's like there are like 300 people in an online class, so one chat comment that's slightly inappropriate can start the whole chat on another angle.
Oh, yeah, completely. And that's and what's so important about that, again, is we continue to reiterate, it never was anybody's intentions initially. Like, it's never anybody's, but there's something about, people don't understand how little it takes to start this cascade effect amongst a group. And next thing you know, you kind of like, what is this? How do we get here? And how do we slow this train down? And in some situations, when you can't stop the train. And like I said, next thing you know, you got on horns with no shirt on, still in a podium, like, and you wondering, you know. So again, it's definitely not to justify any of the actions or anything like that, but I think we don't ask why enough. It's too easy. I mean, but that's what we do, though. A part of what we do in our craft is we try to understand behavior. So we're always asking why, you know? And I think that we don't ask why enough. It's so easy to just label people as good and bad people. If you did something bad, you're a bad person. If you did something good, you're a good person. But most importantly, those are your intentions. You did it and you meant to do it, and that was your intentions, and that's what it is. And I just think that people and life and groups and the dynamic of groups and energy and personalities, it's just so much stuff going on, you know. So again, it's not to justify anything. I'm not saying that say anybody's good or bad, but I do think it's important to pick these pieces apart to figure out, to help people understand what potentially can happen, so when they get in groups, it doesn't happen to them. You know, it's important to talk about these things. So, yeah, good stuff, my friend. Good stuff. It's complicated. You know, as I said before, positive energy and peace and blessings to anybody that got hurt in that debacle. You know, no matter who they were, the young lady that, you know, I think they said flew from San Diego and got shot. I mean, I send out peace and blessings, peace and blessings to her family. Huh?
Air Force veteran?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's tragic, irrespective of what side you're on. You know, it's just a loss of life is tragic. You know, peace and blessings to her family. There's a police officer that got, that died. They got hit with a fire extinguisher. Like, just so much happened. Just the inauguration day is going to be off the hook. You know, I am hoping that they are prepared, not just in Washington, but everywhere, you know, because I think there are going to be probably multiple massive protests. And no matter, again, for me, no matter what's who you support, I think that everybody, whether I agree with you or not, I will always stand up for people's right for their voices to be heard, no matter who you are. No matter what your perspective is, I believe that everybody has a right for their voice to be heard. I just hope that everybody is safe and is very mindful, because as we see, the federal government ain't playing. They tracking people's phone. These people will find you. No matter how invisible you think you are in your group, you know, that cell phone in your pocket is something else. So again, hopefully people are mindful and they will be respectful and exercise, you know, their right to freedom of speech, and hopefully all is well. So, anyway, again, we are up on our hour, but we send peace and blessings to everyone out there. Thank you for continuing to support us and listen to the show. Again, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can contact us at B2BPsych. B, the number 2B, PSYCH, B2BPsych at gmail.com. Again, this is Dr. Hinton, as well as my co-host, my homie, my compadre, Dr. Chapman, in sunny San Diego. I still hate him for that, but, you know, summer will come my way one day. And but as we always say, I always end by just saying that, you know, again, life is full of, you know, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure you're living a life that's worth living. Make sure the people that you love know you love them. And make sure that you are doing something that sets you on fire and makes you feel alive. And I wish you all peace and blessings. Thank you so much. And we will talk to you again next week. We may be switching days. We don't know yet. We may be switching to a Tuesday or a Thursday as opposed to a Wednesday. But when we find out, we will post it on our Facebook pages. We're actually in the process of putting together a Facebook page specifically for the show that we will upload the audio and video as well. So we will have that out as well for those that would like to re-listen to these, as well as you can listen to the audio on mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com on our podcast page, mahoganyloveandlight.podbean.com. Can re-listen to this as well as other shows that we've done as well there. Okay, so I wish y'all peace and blessings, and as always, Dr. Chapman will take us out.
We talked about a lot of things today. We talked about just exploring why people get into these group situations. Hopefully you guys were able to take away, you know, just some food for thought. I guess to bring it down to the individual level, what I think might be helpful for you is for you to think about this question that people are usually exploring at the beginning of the year, this purpose question. I know it's a big question, it's a deep question, it's one of those questions that people spend a lifetime trying to figure out. But I think if you have figured out the why am I here, what am I supposed to do, this purpose question will help you when you get in group situations. And it will help you not end up with your shirt off and horns on your hat and a weird rioting situation. Because you can always ask yourself, once you know who you are and why you're here, you can use that as a compass in every situation. And you can say, is this something that really fits with who I am, my values, what I want to do? And if it doesn't fit, you can leave before the situation gets out of control. Or you can know that if the situation does escalate, it's something that you really are behind, you really want to be a part of, it matches with your values. If you feel like that's what the situation requires. At least you know you're being consistent. So find out, ask that basic question so that you can remain consistent in individual and group situations. We'll see you next week.
This is the student broadcast voice of Marshall University, WMUL-FM, Huntington, West Virginia, USA.